CJSW 90.9 FM. That was a new track there from Love Language. No, sorry, Baba Ali Gold Rush from Laugh Like a Bomb out of London, UK. And that completes our UK content for today's show. By no requirement whatsoever, just randomness that those got grouped together. Well, we continue our election deep dive, provincial election deep dive, with the editor of Alberta Views magazine, Evan Ossington. He's joining us now on the airwaves. Good morning, Evan.
Good morning, Peter.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much for stepping out to chat with us here. A big election issue of Alberta Views magazine. For the June issue you have here, it's like we actually stuck to the set election dates and you were able to plan an issue around that, hey?
I was hearing all through the fall that she was going to spring an election on us and we were going to be, or they're going to change the legislation and she was going to be able to, she being Danielle Smith, was going to delay the election a year. And the whole time I just thought, I don't know why people come up with this stuff. Are we bored? Are we lacking for things to talk about? Like, it was always going to be May. I mean, I don't know. Maybe March. I guess we had the ability to have it over a 3-month span, is my understanding. But yeah, it was always going to be May 2023, and here it is.
I guess that's right. There was the infamous, like, 3-month federal election. Was that the 2015 federal election where Harper June, and the election day wasn't till October?
Yeah, there was a famously long campaign. I think, wasn't that the one where Trudeau won his majority? The provincial legislation allowed for the election to happen within a 3-month window. It wasn't a 3-month campaign. It can happen anywhere from March 1st to the end of May. And so that was my understanding about the flexibility of election law. That may have changed.
Yeah, that's about enough time to start a new political party and run and win.
Yeah, should you want to. No names shall be mentioned. But.
Mm-hmm. Big choice for Alberta this coming election. How did you sort of, knowing that or anticipating, I guess, that we'd have an election, how did you approach assembling the content for this month's issue?
Yeah, it was tricky because we planned pretty far in advance and we had to make an assumption that there was going to be an election in May. And so we did have some content in the May issue and even in the April issue that we thought would be interesting and relevant before an election. But we really did think this June issue, which lands mid-May, so mid-election, would be pretty important. But of course, 6 months out, 8 months out, 10 months out, you know, we didn't know what kind of story would be relevant. Like, what are the issues we're going to be talking about? What's policy are we going to be talking about? What scandals are we going to be talking about? I mean, with the UCP party, there was even some talk about what leader are we even going to be talking about? I don't know if you remember, but there was some talk about whatever scandal it was. I mean, there's been so many, might spell the end of Danielle Smith even back in January, and they might replace her. So we decided we're not going to look at any particular, issue or policy. Let's just look at the bigger picture. So that's why I talked to Lisa Young and asked her to kind of do that, as you described it, 50,000 foot piece on what is the fundamental choice that is before voters. And I do feel bad that we continue to talk about our democracy as though there are only two options, but that is unfortunately the reality of the political system that we've got. And as far as I'm aware, there's only one party that's proposing to change that system. So until the system changes, right now, yeah, it is a binary choice. And so I thought Lisa Young did a pretty good job just outlining the kind of fundamental difference between the two. It was tricky, though. Like, I would say that over the last 6 months, there have been a lot, or what are we in now? May? Yeah, 5 months. There have been a lot of changes, as Lisa Young and you talked about. You know, the UCP has sort of distanced itself from certain positions and certain candidates, and how sincerely, I don't know if this is just strategic or if this is sincere. I don't know. I mean, things like even the arena deal, the Danielle Smith of 10 years ago would have denounced this deal. The Danielle Smith of 6 months ago might have denounced this deal. And yet here we have a supposedly conservative government planning to help subsidize, and a supposedly conservative council planning to subsidize an arena in Calgary. So I don't know. It's these things may just be what you say to get elected, but what the parties seem to fundamentally stand for is what Lisa was looking at. Mm-hmm.
And you've got a feature story in here on sort of the adversarial, and I think we touched on it in previous months, adversarial relationship between the province and the cities. And I mean, in the past, I swear it's been the mayors beating the crap out of the premiers to get money and, you know, investments out of them to sort of win their support, or at least their quiet during the election. And it seems almost like that power dynamic is flipped, where you have the province now sort of beating down the cities or the municipal governments. And so there's a feature story on this here from Ximena Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about this piece?
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably think of us as having three levels of government. You know, municipal government, provincial government, and federal government in Canada. And she makes it pretty clear that the cities are very limited by provincial law in how they can generate revenues and thus what they can do. So, you know, technically we do have three levels of government, but one of those levels, the municipal level, is pretty hamstrung in what they can do. And that's because they are creatures of the province. They are ruled by this Municipalities Act. So, and the main issue is that we pay taxes and those tax revenues go to, federal and provincial government. And then if they, out of the goodness of their heart, decide to pass some of that money along to the cities, I'm kind of, dumbing it down, but essentially the cities can only generate revenues through the property tax and fees. And then anything like capital infrastructure, this sort of stuff, that has to come at sort of the mercy of the province or the federal government. And so if the province decides, LRT is not a priority, climate mitigation, these are not priorities, then the city's going to really struggle to pay for this stuff, even though that is what people are asking for from their municipal government. And that is what certainly the current mayors of Calgary and Edmonton campaign on, was more climate action, retrofitting buildings and reducing the carbon footprint of city operations. But it's very hard to do that if you don't have the ability, short of just jacking property taxes, which is always unpopular, you don't have the ability to raise revenues to do that sort of stuff. So it's this kind of perennial conflict. And you're right, we've looked at it 10 years ago. People could have been writing about this 20 years ago. The relationship between cities and their so-called masters, the provinces, is a bit, abusive, dysfunctional, whatever word you like. And there was a change not that long ago when the NDP government, and it might have happened under the Prentice government because they sort of started this process and they were open to it, but the NDP government brought in these city charters, which really empowered the cities. You could probably tell listeners far more about it than I could. And then the UCP government came in and said, we're scrapping those charters. And so we're back to where we were basically before there was this movement towards empowering cities, fairly recent movement. And now we're back to disempowering them and treating them like our children.
I noticed the dialogue sections, should we ban aggressive dog breeds? Is this some sort of metaphor, election metaphor that I'm not?
Yes, I was hoping you would catch that. No, this is because we were thinking about a municipal fairs issue, but also thinking about an election. And, we kind of fit the election issue into the municipal affairs issue. And I don't know, I guess I was thinking, I did used to live next to a pit bull that had been rescued and seemed very nice, but I was never quite comfortable, and I would certainly have never let my then infant daughter play unattended around this dog. So I was always a little nervous around this dog, but I've always thought, am I being irrational? Am I being crazy? Am I just buying into narratives? And so I had some thoughts, I had some opinions, but I thought I would like to know the evidence on both sides on this one. And it is very much within this is one of the places where the city would have the power to make a call on this one. Like, should we ban aggressive dog breeds, and on what evidence would a ban be justified? So, Brad Nichols with the Calgary Humane Society was arguing against these type of bans. And Mia Johnson is with a group that is quite concerned about pit bull attacks. And so she's arguing for bands. And incidentally, there are many of these bands already exist in Alberta. I mean, coming from Calgary, we think, well, you know, this doesn't exist and it wouldn't exist. We'd never have a ban on this sort of thing. But apparently we do in many municipalities across Alberta. I did not know this.
Interesting. June 21st is National Indigenous Peoples Day. And you've got here in the June issue, a Indigenous travel guide. Can you give us a little background on this?
Yeah, we tend to keep the themes the same for most of our guides every year. But when it comes to travel, we try to mix it up every year. So, you know, sometimes we focus on cultural travel or on, you know, camping or whatever. And anyway, this year we thought, let's look at Indigenous travel, Indigenous, you know, kind of cultural experiences for all manner of Albertans. And so, yeah, we divided it up between four regions in the province, you know, northeast, southwest, and looked into a number of different options. A lot of this was, some of it was familiar to me and some of it was new. I think some of these opportunities are pretty new as Indigenous travel, you know, operated for the benefit of Indigenous people. I think a lot of this is fairly new in the province. So a lot of the content in this guide was new to me. So yeah, there's a lot of different options should people want to get out in Alberta, you know, not leave the province, stay closer to home, but experience maybe parts of Alberta culture that maybe they're a little less familiar with.
Very cool. Yeah, I feel like there's an absence of this kind of information out there. So good on Alberta Views for putting together a really solid guide here.
Well, good.
Have you voted yet?
I have not. I should have voted already, but I have a doctor's appointment on Monday, so I thought maybe I would. Well, I have to go to the doctor anyway. I thought, and it's right by my polling station. I thought I'd just bundle them.
So time that with a 14-hour wait, maybe. And
I wonder. That would be nice, wouldn't it? I mean, a wait is bad in that it's inconvenient, but a wait also means that turnout is high, which would be nice, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're plans do change, you can advance vote until this Saturday. Advance polls are open now and run until end of day Saturday. So you can go to the internet, Alberta Elections Alberta website, and find the advance polling location closest to you. It's not necessarily the same as your election day poll. So do keep that in mind. Well, it's going to be a tight one on Monday.
It seems that way. Yeah.
Any predictions? Any bold?
I think this is what you and Lisa talked about. I predict this will be unlike any Alberta election in history. We've never had this kind of contest before. There's never been a centrist progressive party that is neck and neck with the ruling conservative party. We've never probably been this close to an election and not had any inkling of the outcome. Even a week before 2015, it was starting to, I didn't believe it, but it was starting to look like it might be the NDP winning. I mean, Rachel Notley talked about even 4 or 5 days before the 2015 election, knowing that all of a sudden, you know, kind of came to her, I'm going to win this thing and we better stop campaigning and start thinking about the transition. And so, but you know, here we are a couple of days out and it really could be any outcome. So I'll predict that it'll be unlike any Alberta election ever. It'll be probably closer than any Alberta election ever. You know, it could be a margin of a few seats, which makes the legislative dynamic very interesting, which makes people who, let's say the UCP win, there are people in the UCP caucus who might be more centrist, who, I mean, it's hard to believe, but maybe there still are. They would have an awful lot of power if the UCP margin of victory is only 2 or 3 seats. I mean, I suppose the same would go for the NDP, but tight margin of victory. I would hope there'll be a high voter turnout, although it's really hard to say. In some ways, I've never known people to be more engaged, like in my own personal life, friends, family, neighbors. I've never seen this level of engagement before. But that's not necessarily a reliable indicator of what's actually going on. I felt like the debate was kind of a non-event, so I'm not sure it really galvanized people the way maybe previous debates have. I don't know. It's really the first time we've had a two-party race like this. What effect does that have on consciousness and awareness and turnout. I don't know. I think we're in uncharted territory no matter what.
I would agree. And I would also say that we're more and more in a world where people are getting their information not from the news, not from news media. And although, you know, social media has been around a while, the dynamic has really changed, and it's hard to say what that means.
Yeah, I mean, I can't
means.
Tell you what's going on from my social media because, of course, I'm in my bubble. If I looked at someone else's social media feed, I might get a very different sense of what's been going on in this election and where the momentum is.
Well, then let's leave it at that. Get outside your bubble, peoples, and go vote sometime between now and Saturday or Monday, Election Day. And thank you, Evan, for joining us this morning and sharing with us behind the scenes, Alberta Views, June 2023.
Thanks, Peter.
Once again, I've been chatting with the editor of Alberta Views magazine, Evan Ossington. You can check out the June issue on newsstands, The Big Choice. And you can do some homework on who you're planning on voting for in this election and how you'd like to see the next 4 years in Alberta play out. We'll jump to some music, though, in the meantime, so we can all sit and think.
Packed up your teeth inside a Ziploc bag to catch the train that took you back to your hometown. You cried and grieved the whole way. You say, I got the guts to leave. It's not a contest, but I get it. Just trying to have some fun before the sirens drag me under. So, oh, don't you think you should throw